Why did we choose this life? Why did we become superheroes? We dedicate our lives to fighting crime for one reason. To make $1 billion on a superhero franchise. Now let's go through the plan one more time. First, we start with a Coon movie. Then we do the Super Craig movie. Then Super Craig and Coon will join forces in the Human Kite movie just as we start ramping up Kitty's Netflix series. How come I have to have the Netflix series? I want a movie too. You have a movie, Mysterion. You're in the third Coon and Friends United movie after your Netflix series.
Yeah, but he's saying he doesn't ever get his own movie.
Do I get my own movie? Not everyone gets their own movie.
The franchise plan sucks. If we want to make billions of dollars, then I think we should start with the Tupperware movie.
Right, start with a black superhero.
Marvel is making a black superhero movie.
Yeah, now. They waited years to get to that. We follow their plan. We do all the real people first, and we sneak the black guy in phase three.
How about we just do movies starring all of us, like all the time? But then we're just rehashing the same old material.
There's nothing wrong with doing the exact same movie to start a franchise.
Okay, J.J. Abrams.
Okay, oh, okay, so you're on Carpet's side?
He just likes this plan because he gets two movies in phase one.
God! We have to just go with this plan. We don't even have one movie yet.
How did it get to this? How did we grow so far apart?
You go with the plan. Maybe we'll just go and do our own franchise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you want Civil War? Is that what you want? Yeah, dude, Civil War. You. You get out of my house.
We'll make way more money on our franchise.
Go ahead. I bet you don't even get halfway through phase one on your franchise, DC Comics.
I thought Civil War wasn't supposed to happen until phase three.
Shut up, Super Craig. I didn't want to have to do this, but you leave me no choice.
Did I just hear someone use a microaggression?
Available December 6th. Get the Stick of Truth free with purchase. Pre-order now for Towley bonus content.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the first ever South Park, the Fractured Butthole, PAX West 2016 panel. Please make some noise. My name's Tim Geddes. You might know me as the other guy from Kinda Funny that's not Greg Miller. Or you might not know me at all. But we're gonna change that today because we're gonna have a grand old time. We got a lot of things going on, we got a lot of fun. I'm letting you know right now, you are at the most exclusive panel at PAX. This is not being streamed on the internet. This is just for you people in this room. So I need you guys to do me a favor. Don't video any of this stuff. I don't want to see any of this stuff. No periscopes, none of that, okay? Now, in exchange for that, I'm going to pull an Oprah, and you guys are all going to get some cool stuff. I got this little Mysterion pin here. Who has the Mysterion pin? I promise that if we get through the whole panel at the end of it, each and every one of you will get the pin. So, thank you very much for coming out and doing all that. Now, if you guys have been to a good panel at PAX before, you know that we want interaction. We want a lot of hype, a lot of noise, a lot of stuff. So when I ask a question, I don't want to see any hands. I want to hear your response. Who here loves South Park? You guys are a good crowd. They already know what's up. Who here played South Park, the Stick of Truth? Who here loves farts? You guys are in the right place. Next to me are the beautiful, beautiful Ubisoft San Francisco team. They came here all the way from San Francisco to talk to you guys. So if you have questions for them, make sure that throughout the panel you're tweeting using hashtag South Park Game. We'll get to your questions later in the day. But first off, one by one, let's have you guys introduce yourselves, what you do, and why it matters.
Oh, why does it matter? I'm Jason Schroeder.
You have to matter.
Yeah, I justify yourself. I am the senior producer at Ubisoft San Francisco, which pretty much means I'm like a project manager. I'm also the primary liaison between our studio and South Park. So why does that matter? Because they're basically our creative directors, so we need to know what they want.
My name is Yoli Menzel. I am the narrative designer on the South Park game, and what that means is I basically oversee the story of the game. I have a horribly intricate version of the South Park wiki embedded in my brain. I basically take the scripts from Matt and Trey and turn them into missions and make the game make sense. It's important so you can play the game and there's a story to it.
I'm Ken Strickland. I'm the lead game designer for the game, which means basically I have not the wiki in my head, but just like how all the whole thing fits together. So trying to figure out, you know, how combat actually connects to story, how just running around the town is actually going to be fun. Yeah, which leads us to...
Hi, Ryan DeVolt, audio design. excuse me. I design the audio systems that play back the sounds as well as create the sounds. That matters because the smell of farts is the bad part of farts, right? The sound of the fart is the funny part, so it matters.
I totally agree. Ken, I imagine you agree as well. You know, even just seeing the trailer, there's a lot of graphic stuff going on in that. Did you ever think that your video game career would bring you to, you know, just talking about farts all day? Like, what's a meeting like at the Ubisoft SF offices?
I planned and hoped and dreamt that I'd be talking about farts every day. Yeah, no, like, our studio looks like every other studio, except our whiteboards are kind of like an ocean of butts. Mm. And the occasional piece of just, like, impromptu yaoi, I think. Mm.
That's for me.
Yeah. It's an open secret. We all know. Yeah, and then the meetings themselves, like, they start like normal game design meetings where, you know, you're trying to figure out, you know, how to make people have fun, and then after that it slowly turns more into, like, a sort of joke-telling, writer-y space where we're just trying to find, you know, all the unique things that the kids can say.
How often are the whiteboards actually used?
All the time, yeah. I mean, basically, we have to do real work every so often, and then it has to go away, and then more butts have to go.
Yeah. Has somebody in particular mastered the dick?
I've got a pretty good dick.
Yeah. He's got a good grasp, yeah.
It's an okay dick, Jason.
So Jolie, so how is kind of the joke creation process? Like, how do you, you know, obviously South Park is a very, very funny show, has a lot of lineage and legacy. Like, how do you kind of create the jokes for the game?
Well, first you draw a dick on the whiteboard.
Good. Yep. Step one.
As is the ceremony. And then we kind of just get in a room and tell jokes. We riff off each other. We talk about the story. We talk about the boys and how they interact with each other. We always want the kids to stay being kids. That's a big part of South Park. So we really look at how South Park episodes are structured, how the stories are told, and try to translate that into the game.
Do you watch a lot of South Park? Do you guys ever have meetings where you just watch the show or watch any other movies?
Jason can't know this, but yes, we do just watch the meetings.
Do it!
When season 20 is coming up, I know, hopefully you guys know that. September 14th, the premiere. Those are like major, major milestones for us to have the episodes of 19. You know, you saw PC Principal there. As we watched 19 develop, like all of you, we were like, oh man, how much of this is coming into the game? Turns out a lot of it.
Turns all of it.
But then now with 20, we're super fans, so everybody's counting down the days to the premiere and going down to their studio and seeing the efforts kind of switch from game efforts to the energy that comes with the season. It's just, I don't know, it's contagious.
Yeah. So Jason, like, because you kind of get to be the liaison between Matt and Trey and the game,
yeah.
Like, how close are they in the development process?
From the first meeting, they were, Ubisoft was talking to them. It was like, well, let's make a game together again. And they said, well, if we're going to do that, what's it going to be about? And it was pretty quickly, okay, it's going to be about superheroes, because there's a lot to make fun of there. Mm. And then it became, well, what should we do? How should we iterate on the Stick of Truth? Because that was great. But, you know, Ubisoft San Francisco is taking it fresh. We want to make everything 2.0. So Trey started writing a script. We started doing game concepts back home, and then we were having every 2 weeks or so we were back in Los Angeles just going over, this is what we're bringing, this is what he's bringing, and then those guys are both hardcore gamers. Trey's more like a hardcore RPG guy, like Ultima and hardcore board gaming, and Matt's more like FIFA and The Division, so we have to find this perfect balance between totally accessible to someone who doesn't want to fiddle in menus and totally deep for someone that really wants to dig in.
Yeah, so how do you kind of balance that when it comes from like the comedy with the actual gameplay elements?
I think Ken should talk about that.
Okay, good, yeah. So the, it's funny because like most games are built on systems, right? Like especially RPGs, you're, you know, you have the same things happening over and over again, different random encounters, that sort of thing. But repetition is pretty much the death of comedy. You hear the same joke 30 seconds apart and you've already written the whole thing off. So this time around, it's like, yes, we're gonna have like all the trappings of RPGs, but a lot of our thought has kind of gone into like, okay, actually this time we're in this location and these characters are fighting and this person hit this person. How do we make something that calls up something unique each time? You know, like Craig hits Tweak, Tweak feels offended, something gets said. Yeah, it's sad.
So Jason, at what point do you kind of take this script from Trey and then deliver it off to these guys? And what's the process from there?
So when we know that he's got a script and he's basically it's playing with paper cutouts. Okay, just made with paper cutouts.
We don't do any work.
Well, a script comes in and we do a read through at the studio and try to figure out, like, is there any problems in terms of, wait, that character's already used in another scene at the same point in time in the game, and we try to just kind of hammer out those continuity things. But beyond that, that just base level of review, like, Jolie and team start figuring out what are the interactive moments.
Yeah, so we literally do a script read. We do terrible impersonations of the characters.
I think mine's
yeah.
I do a pretty good Jimmy, actually.
Do it.
Yeah.
Well, so we take the script.
It's gonna take forever.
So we take the script, it's literally a TV script, and that's when we have to kind of dig into it and say, okay, now how do we get it so the player is actually driving this? Because we don't want this game to just be press A, play cutscene. We want the player playing through it. So we look at the script and the story and we kind of figure out what Trey really wants from this moment. And we kind of just look at the different systems in the game that we have and say, okay, well this feels like a good combat moment, or this feels like a good time to go talk to this character and find something for them. And that's kind of when it goes over to y'all.
Y'all, yeah. Yeah, because it's not just about press A to win. It's okay, here's a scene, here's some reason why everything exists, and how can interactivity actually make it better? It also means that you have this great script, and you can start pulling things out from that script into gameplay. Like if everybody's drunk, maybe alcohol has something to do with the battle you're about to have. Stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's important to take any dialogue involved in those systems and make sure the timing of how they play back is just right, because Matt and Trey are really good with comedic timing, right? The way the characters deliver their lines is just, it's perfect, and that's part of why it's so funny. So first we kind of make sure that's all in order for sound, and then a dump truck backs up and full of features from these guys, and it just pours over my head. And then, so we figure out from a sound perspective, you know, how can we make these gameplay moments fun, energizing, but not tiresome after hearing, you know, farts over and over again. Like Fartcore, are you guys familiar with Fartcore? Have you seen that?
You should describe it.
Okay, I'll describe it. So basically, in our recent demo, there's a treasure chest on top of a roof of a building. And, you know, how are you going to get up there? Well, you call in your buddy Kyle, the human kite, and he hops on your back, and then you use your fart to glide with his kite up the building to the treasure chest.
He likes it though, it's fine.
We've all been there.
He wants you to.
You know?
He's super excited. Friday he comes night. In and he's like, let's do this. And then you just fart your way up.
I always feel bad for the buddies. Like, yeah. They're always like, let me help. And you just fart everywhere.
Yeah, I guess they get used to it, right? So just making sure we nail those. And after that, it's really kind of peppering in sounds to match the show's, what I like to call, purposely cheesy Foley. It's like simple sounds. A good example would be the slap fight between Kyle and Cartman. Was that episode 4 of season 10? Look it up. It's hilarious. I don't have that written down right here. That's yeah, it's just...
No one's going to check your notes. It's fine.
But that's it, basically.
So something that's interesting to me about that is, specifically for Jolie and Ryan, when you say you get a script that's pretty much a TV episode script, like, How accurate is that? Like, when you watch the show, can you kind of imagine where you put gameplay elements in?
Oh, yeah. I've started watching the shows and being like, okay, am I playing as Tweak, punching the shit out of Craig? Maybe. Is that fun? So, yeah, you definitely kind of, like, hit this cadence of, when would it be really nice if I got to actually, like, interact with these characters? Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, too, is because we get these TV scripts, they're not complete game scripts. You know, like, you guys play games, there's a lot more than just the cutscenes. There's a lot of people talking in the town, there's combat arcs, there's all these different elements. And so what we do is we actually have a lot of additive stuff to add to these scripts as well. We have to do a lot of supplemental dialogue to kind of get the general feelings from the scripts to carry over all these different gameplay moments. Because we only really have coverage for cutscenes and major dialogue. So a lot of what we do actually in-house is we have a lot of really funny people who write dialogue that fits the script and like kind of pushes the themes of the script forward through things like combat and exploration.
Actually, yeah, I remember one meeting where a bunch of us got in a room and on the whiteboard we put together this matrix of all the characters, how they're like, what their relationship is, right? So we had things like Cartman, you know, thinks Kyle's a sucky superhero.
They hate his laser eyes.
Craig, Tweak, they're dating.
But fighting.
Or fighting.
Same thing Scott, sometimes.
Unfortunately, Scott was like floating up in the right corner and it just said diabetes. We're still working on that one.
Okay, so you get the script, it kind of goes down the process, and then it results, obviously, in gameplay. Do you guys want to see? You want to see some?
We were supposed to be a duo, remember, Tweak?
Yeah, I remember. So when I walked out on Coon and Friends, you should have walked out with me.
I like Coon and Friends.
Because you had your own movie. Thank God you're here. You're really going at it.
Super Craig had to have movies before Wonder Tweak was introduced. It made no sense otherwise.
Your whole group makes no sense.
Because you're a traitor, Tweak, and now you're with a group of super traitors.
This was started by you. By people who thought there should be preferential treatment to certain heroes.
We aren't the ones who walked out of the franchise, Mysterion.
Eric, you must listen to me. I'm speaking to you.
Get out of my head, Timmy.
Your franchise is going nowhere. Face the truth, Eric. You guys are kind of...
He just like in my mind.
He did?
Alright, you son of a.
Beeping in the final product.
Okay, cool. So this is the sensor. Again,
so
exclusive
weird.
For you guys. You're getting the special treatment here. So Ken, like with comedy, right, like that's something that is very underutilized in video games. Like you get it here and there, but I think that this is a very unique situation, specifically for like an RPG. What are some of the challenges in terms of combining gameplay and comedy together?
Well, a lot of it comes back to what I was saying earlier about repetition being the death of comedy, right? So, like, one of the things we're really proud of there is that, you know, those lines where the kids were kind of, like, playing off each other, that's not just, like, in a scripted order, right? Like, we have these systems that are paying attention to who's hit who, what happened before, so that they can actually, like, play new lines each time. In addition to that, again, it's about, even if you've got like a common system, like, oh yeah, you've got a crafting system like every other RPG on the planet, at least you've got a way of interfacing with the items, the things you find from previous episodes in a new way. It's not that you just kind of like load them into a crap sack and sell them and they disappear from your mind forevermore.
And we get to play with gameplay tropes too, you know.
Yeah.
If you wait a lot, if we like wait around in the game and we, you know, as a game designer, we want the player to move forward, we want to tell them what to do. And since it's a comedy game, we can just tell them to do it. You know, if you're hanging out with the coon, he's probably just going to say, hey, fucking do the thing already, please.
Yeah.
So what other games kind of inspired the gameplay in Fractured Butthole?
Well, I mean, like Jason mentioned earlier, you know, like, Trey is a huge kind of RPG and board game fan. So definitely on the more tactical side, you know, we were playing like Dead of Winter, also like Fire Emblem, XCOM. Mm-hmm. But again, those are all like crazy hardcore. And we didn't want that to just be, you know, hey, here's your South Park episode, now go play something from Planet Tactics. Instead, what we tried to do is look at each of those games and figure out, like, okay, we want to add some degree of depth so when you're playing Hour 5, Hour 10, it still feels new. But we want to do that without burying you in, like, 3-4 layers of submenus and, like, a hidden chart that you just looked up on GameFAQs anyway. So our mantra was basically that anything that adds depth is already on the screen. That's why everything is, like, our new kind of combat system is all about space. That you can see everything that you need to know already there, and it has this nice side benefit of actually, you know, getting you one step closer to the town. You're actually fighting in Stan's room, you're actually fighting in City Hall or in Skeeter's bar. Yeah.
So you mentioned depth.
Yes.
Which reminds me, can we get the next picture pulled up? Because it doesn't get much deeper than this. So this here, there's a lot of intricate systems going on, This is the fart algorithm. Now, Ryan, I need to know, like, what really makes the perfect fart? Like, how did you get there? How did you figure out this advanced equation?
Okay, so there's two important points.
You're doing a dissertation on farts. You can do
yes.
That. Yeah.
So there's the control over the fart, you know, as you're playing, and the sounds that are played back. So what you're seeing here is, oh man, that's amazing. It's that is the audio side of what happens when you're controlling the player's ass. We're calling it total ass control. So the designers wanted to basically make the left-right stick on the gamepad. That's the player's butt cheeks.
Yeah. a stick for each cheek.
So I had to think about, all right, how do we, the player's gonna have full control of the player's ass.
Total ass control, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I already said that, sorry. So how do we make the audio react to that? So basically we're taking these values, like 0 to 100 of, the horizontal movement of the sticks, this is you squeezing and spreading your butt cheeks open, that mostly affects things like the fart loops we're playing back, anything from a tiny little squeaky, you know, to the air version of opening the floodgates. Just from opening and closing, right? And it also usually affects volume. Moving up and down on the sticks is kind of like you're like wiggling here. So we're changing pitch. You know, you can bend the pitch of the fart up and down. You might turn up the reverb or add an echo to your farts with the other stick.
I mean, at one point I saw you with a chart that had an axis that said like clean versus chunky.
Oh yeah, that's right.
On one side you got the clean, on the other side you got the chunky. We've all been there too.
Yeah. So yeah, we have the system down, and then we're like, all right, we need the assets to fill this thing. So this is where this comes in, assets. Yes. And so first we had to map out, like, all right, yeah, we need when the sticks move, what do we want to move from? Like clean to wet, chunky, dry.
I think the most important thing I learned, so we, like, you know, working with Matt and Trey directly, you're learning from these like comedic geniuses. But one
nugget of information I'll never forget was that mouth farts are funnier than butt farts.
Yes. So when we recorded our sounds, we didn't actually fart into a mic.
Not even
there might be
a little bit. Yeah.
There might be one or two that were sneaking into the game, but. Good. But you know, there was a lot of like the classic mouth fart and hand to armpit.
Straw at armpit. Yeah. I saw you do.
Elbow actually, pit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. There's the we found a YouTube video online while doing research of this mother who,
fart research.
Who, yes, fart research. Research. There was this mother who says, "Oh, I have this great way to make my children laugh," and she takes a straw and puts it in her armpit and blows into it to make fart noises. So. Using all of those tools, as well as we have this stuff called noise putty, and it's just like a cup of putty that you get air under, and I meant to bring it, I'm sorry. You just push it down and it makes wonderful fart sounds. So we use all these to record these wet, chunky, dry loops. And then this system, when you're controlling the sticks, is what blends between those audio files, giving you total ass control. Because control, I think, is important in today's games, right? We want to play how you want to play. So, like, if you're the quiet, stealthy type, right, you sneak in undetected, you can fart like that in the fracture level. If you're, like, the big, beefy, guns blazing, taking many hits like the tanking champ you are, you can fart like that, too.
That's me.
Yeah.
Thanks
yeah.
for giving me total control of how I want to, you know, live my destiny. So I'm most impressed that this is a real thing that was up there. Like, that is something that you actually spent time doing. It's not a joke. Like,
that's
legitimate.
Real.
There's a lot going into that and a lot of different systems. But the question I really have is, like, why? Like, what does that do for the game? Like, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, the comedy and gameplay and kind of meshing them. From the audio perspective, how important is the fart sound to the gameplay?
Well, first, one does not ask why when you're making history.
This is art.
And sorry, actually, could you repeat the question? I had to get that line out.
From a gameplay, the gameplay perspective, like, what does having the different farting abilities kind of add?
Well, so, I mean, you're a superhero, right? And your power is your ass. So, you know, we want you to be able to affect the world with it. So there's different fart tools. Not, you know, this one allows you to bend space and time, right? But there's other ones that let you break things at a distance or, you know, just make people gag and say funny things, right? So,
I mean, the genesis of this is really like, we came over to Ryan and basically said, "Hey, you liked Ocarina of Time, right? You like that whole Ocarina."
You know, the Song of Storms? Let's do it with farts.
Do it with your butt. Just think of it as a musical instrument.
Yeah, we're really hoping that once the game comes out, we'll see YouTube videos of you performing music with with the main character's ass.
And then, well, and then doing covers in real life. You know, why limit it to the game? I mean, let's go down the line here. What type of fart are you? Are you stealth fart? Are you chunky?
Silent but deadly. I will crop dust the shit out of you.
Beware. She's doing that right now.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it's the attempt at silent but deadly, but then about 30 seconds in, it just like squeaks out.
It's a long
And then
fart.
There's just the, well, yeah, no, it's a pretty it's real control. And then after that, I'm just facing a room full of people that all know. They all know what I did.
You all know.
Yeah. We're very close at the studio. Yeah. We can. Oh, yeah. We can talk about farts.
HR loves us.
Yeah. This is our job, by the way. We're sitting in front of hundreds of people talking about farts. So thank you all for joining. Again, remember, you can go on Twitter, use the hashtag SouthParkGame to ask your questions, and we'll ask these beautiful people. But first, you know, you're talking a lot about these farts and this character that has these abilities. Superheroes, obviously, are a big part of this game. The most important thing to a superhero is the origin story. Right. So, who wants to see the origin story of this game? Let's check it out.
All superheroes have a compelling backstory. It's from that backstory that their powers gain meaning. Let's take you back to when you were just a child. You lay awake that night. Like so many other nights, you couldn't sleep because you knew you weren't like the other kids. You walked to the mirror. You looked in the mirror and you felt alone. And that's when it happened. A loud noise. You swore you could hear your mother calling for help. You left your room. You left your room! Seriously, dude, just walk through the door already? Out in the hallway, you saw two intruders in front of your parents' door! You had to stop them from hurting your parents. You knew you had the power to stop them, so for the first time, you called upon your speedster powers! As a super-fast speedster hero, you bent space-time itself to spring into action with super speed! You moved in closer to the intruder to deliver a quantum punch! Once his atoms returned to their original positions, the intruder realized what he was up against.
Damn, we weren't expecting a superhero to live here.
Desperately, the intruder struck our hero.
Take this!
Emboldened, his fellow intruder moved into the fray.
You don't scare us, superhero.
But the intruders were only moving closer to their demise. You vibrated every subatomic particle to become an unstoppable high-energy body.
Hey, what's the kid doing now?
Once charged, you only needed one turn to defeat the hapless intruders. First, you gave the second intruder a taste of your atom-smashing quantum fist!
Oh, my atoms!
With both intruders weakened, there was nothing they could do against the hero's final strike, a supersonic dash!
Ah, ooh, he was just too speedy!
With the intruders soundly defeated, you thought you were safe, until a third massive intruder entered the fray, bigger than the other two intruders combined!
I just flushed one little Now here's one more!
Before you could react, he swung his gargantuan fist into your small body, doing critical damage! You heard, yes, but the intruder had made a critical mistake. He pissed you off. Summoning the last of your strength, you tapped into your ultimate ability, the multiverse strike! So you beat them. All seemed to be okay. But then you finally reached your parents' door. And what you saw when you opened that door changed your life forever and led you to fighting crime. You were too late. Because when you opened that door, you saw your dad, your mom. Wow, that's a pretty heavy backstory. You fight crime because you never forgot the night you weren't in time. And you saw your own father, the man you trusted, your mom. It's like a ripple in time you can't ever change, isn't it?
Wow. Cool.
Well, there you go. So, Jason,
yeah,
I'm going to need a bit more background on that.
So, sad moments are really important in South Park as well. So, honestly, the low moments are just as important as the high ones. So we try to make sure that also when we're reviewing these scripts, we try to make sure we hit the emotional beats so that you can kind of have the spikes. But also that backstory, obviously Cartman is narrating it and we're playing over it at a pretty rapid clip, but that's actually kind of the tutorial for your new powers. So if, for those of you that played Stick or other RPGs, you kind of usually prompted to choose that character class at the beginning of the game. You choose warrior, thief, or Jew. And then in this case, the character chose Speedster. And so Cartman narrated you through how to use those powers, what sort of choice you just made, and actually, you know, in the final game, you can, you know, do you like that? You want to try something else? And like, okay, go back through it, and okay, now you came, woke up in your parents' room, you went to the mirror, you went outside, and now you're a brutalist, and you used your brutalist powers, and what were those like? And so we really wanted you to be able to experience those RPG tactical powers, and not feel like you had to be like, well, I don't know what the difference between these things are, so I'm just going to choose the one with the coolest image or that seems like is a joke. And so mixing and matching those powers becomes like a big deal, and we wanted you to have more control, even more control over your butt. So you're welcome.
Fantastic. So Julie, when it comes to kind of the, again, going back to the narrative of it and the comedy, there was some pretty risque stuff going on there. You know, I mean, I've never seen my dad.
What do you mean?
I've never seen my dad do anything of that nature to my mom, but...
Don't worry,
you
probably
I feel like it would be, you know, kind of horrifying. Has there been any times you've been in a meeting room, you guys are sitting around pitching things, and you're just like, you know what, no. No, we're not going to do that. Or has there been, like, a challenge where you're like, I don't know how to make a game out of that, but we're gonna.
Oh, we're always going to. We look at those challenges face on, and because what I love about games is that you can do some horrible shit. I'm gonna say shit also, sorry. This game has ruined me. you can do some horrible shit in movies, but the beauty of games is that you can make people do horrible shit. So enjoy that.
Can you give us any examples of some...
No spoilers.
No spoilers. Okay, cool. You're committed
to... No spoilers.
The shock value is really a lot of it. And, like, you might see, like, as we keep rolling out information about the game, like, a lot of it comes from the first act because we try to always make sure, like, you guys are going to make your own choices in this game. You're going to have your own class and sort of, you know, the amount that you talk to the Coon or Kyle or, like, is really going to be up to you. So to discover that shocking moment, you know... In Stick, you find a horse fucker behind a door. In this game, you know, exposing such things and interacting with them is really kind of the goal.
You know, I think it's funny where not only is the writing funny, but I think that it's also just the kind of the visual gags too, and that the shock value, right? Like seeing a grown man beat a young child. It's a lot to kind of take in, but I think that, in addition to the gameplay...
I'll tell you that we've iterated on that, and he hits you way harder now. Way, way harder.
Good. But in addition to that, there is the kind of the quips in the writing, like the guy busting out of the room saying, I'm going to flush the other shit or whatever. How much of that, Julie, is it like kind of just pre-done, and like how many like different variations are there? And that's for you too, Ryan, with the audio of it all, like how many different lines do you have to record? Because in a movie, you know, you record the script once and or a bunch of times to choose the best take, and that's it. But with a video game, you need to keep it not repetitive, and you need to make sure that like the players, it's just as funny no matter what. How do you do that?
Yeah, well, like to Ken's earlier point of repetition, kind of really being detrimental to comedy, we took that into account very early, and so. We actually have a dialogue system that's built upon, it's not about pre-scripting conversations, but it's about building conversations based on situations. So a good example of that is Tweek and Craig in the Civil War combat. We know that they're mad at each other, so that's something we check for. We know that Tweek has attacked Craig. We know that Craig is reacting to being attacked. Those are all things we can test for and have them talk. And what's cool about that is there's multiple lines, for instance, when Craig says, you know, don't be a dick, Tweek actually has multiple responses to that, and our system actually just picks one randomly. Some of those will go into a longer conversation where they continue to argue. Sometimes Tweek gets the last word, and it's actually totally random. So we actually will have like lots of different takes and lots of different lines to feed this pool to create this kind of dynamic conversation system so that whenever you play a combat, you're not just gonna hear, like if you have to like restart or replay the combat, you're not gonna have the same conversations the next time you play. You're gonna have a more randomized pool of those.
Yeah, we also make sure to, like we put what's called cool downs on a lot of these lines so that once you hear it, you know, you're not likely to hear it again if it's a very specific line or if it's, you know, attack grunts. Again, we try to keep it so you don't constantly hear the same grunt over and over again.
Yeah, even the grunts be like mix up, so you won't hear like the same like huh, 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 like Zelda noise. You're gonna hear different grunts every time someone jumps or attacks or something.
So Ken, why go with superheroes? You know, with Stick of Truth, it was obviously kind of the typical role playing fantasy setting and all that stuff, and that made a lot of sense. Why did you guys decide to go with superheroes for this one?
Oh man, have you been to the movie theater in like the past 5 years? Like, I mean, it's basically that. I mean, after Stick of Truth, you know, I think by and large, like Matt and Trey don't revisit the same material and mine it for, you know, the exact same joke. You know, like they got some good licks in on just RPGs in general and fantasy tropes, and now it really, I mean, superheroes are past due, you know? So, and plus, I mean, it also fits that nice nexus where, you know, the target is ripe, it's still relevant, and it plays really well into gameplay. I mean, again, like a lot of the stuff that we think about is like, you know, it's not just
like a normal superhero game. This is kids playing at it. So a lot of our, you know, a lot of our powers and a lot of our systems go into like the differences between actually being a superhero and being a kid that thinks they're one. You know, like that kind of playground experience of, you know, always kind of renegotiating the rules. I mean, Jason mentioned earlier about the kind of our classing and in fact our multi-classing system. You know, it has this narrative wrapper where, you know, like you start and Cartman's like, hey, guess what? This is how this game works. You get one class, pick it. It's just like that first game.
He's basically your DM.
Yeah, and he's a shit DM. And basically, over the course of the game, you guys wear him down, and the rules get renegotiated. Oh, fine, you can have another class. But it's stuff like that, where we can actually, on a gameplay level, introduce new mechanics in a way that makes sense for the narrative, where the kids are like, of course kids would play that way. Of course my lasers do this now. But it also means that like our powers are kind of evenly divided between, oh, that was an actual fucking laser that came out of Kyle's eyes, or, you know, kids rubbing sandpaper together and like...
Craig just flipped you off.
Yeah, that was his power. That was his superpower. He literally does not give a fuck. Yeah. So
how did you guys kind of balance the different classes in terms of, like, obviously superheroes, people know who Spider-Man is or Batman or The Flash or whatever. How did you guys decide to look at those kind of archetypes combined with the South Park characters and creating new heroes based on their traits?
Sure. So, I mean, like, you kind of framed it in your question there, right? Which is that for the other kids, their superhero personas are just, and their powers are just another way for us to get their character out. You know, like, Scott really is diabetic, and so he's Captain Diabetes, that's who he is.
Yeah. Well, that's like the sad part of it, right? Is like, right. I'm going to turn this thing that everyone makes fun of me for, and that makes me feel powerless, into something that makes me feel powerful. Like, right. So there is like this really good emotional core to characters like him, but then of course it is just him being diabetic.
Yeah, but at the opposite end you got Cartman, who like thinks of himself as essentially the coon, mm-hmm. as Batman, and we get to tell the story of how he's not, you know, mm-hmm. he's just kind of terrible. Yeah.
My favorite like tiny narrative thing we did with the combat design was that Craig and Tweak have like complementary power sets. So Craig actually does only like short range melee attacks, and then Tweak only does long range support attacks.
Yeah.
So they like play well together, even though they're fighting.
Uh-huh.
They're such good boys.
But the for the main character, you know, who gets to choose from like all 12 of these classes. It came down to like looking at what the biggest archetypes were in like movies, like what would be fun to parody, and then on top of that, looking for what would be tactically interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And again, like combining those is a lot of fun, you know, figuring out like what is the South Park kid version of like the glass cannon or the Incredible Hulk. Mm-hmm.
So looking at the video we just saw, like we got to see kind of the evolution of the gameplay from Stick of Truth over to Fractured Butthole. How have you seen it kind of evolve? And like,
it's
what are the
butthole?
The fractured butthole.
Two words.
How have you kind of seen it evolve? And like, why did you take it in such a different direction?
Mostly because it came back to that earlier point of like, I wanted hour 5 and hour 10 to feel different from hour 1. And really, the only way to do that, especially in a comedy game, is to push your systems in a way where you've got new context every single time.
I think we were also doing, like, trying to get more and more seamless between the show and the game. And so as we were like, okay, that's perfect, like you were saying before, Stan's room, it's exactly the background that they use for Stan's room in the show. We imported into the game, and now we're exploring that background. And so to teleport to a proxy of Stan's room became like, well, let's just have the fight here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, well, a second ago we were able to walk around in here, so why would we not be able to walk around while we're fighting? But it's like, okay, well, we could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, well, we still need like people to stop and listen for these jokes. We still need turn-based. So then when you take space and turn-based gameplay, it starts to just become a tactics game.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of talk a little bit about that, about the importance of space and time in the battle system?
Yeah, I mean, the other half of that, the simple fact is that turn-based makes sense for this genre because, you know, the jokes need time to land. Like, I'm sure everybody in here has played first-person shooters, and, like, you know, the sheer amount of, like, I find it hilarious when you know, they're trying to have like really serious conversations, like, you don't understand, soldier, like lives are at stake here, and you're just like sniping heads, you know, like across the room. Like, it's tough to get any sort of dialogue to land when action is happening. So being able, this gives us permission to kind of like stage one after the other and get them to kind of interleave with each other. And time is also important for total plot reasons I can't get into, but also because it's a tactics game. And so like you actually spend a lot of time kind of like looking at that timeline, figuring out how can I take care of this guy before his turn comes up. Yeah.
Julie, how do you kind of decide on the importance and the priority levels when it comes to the dialogue system? And like, what, why would this conversation be more important to hear than this one?
Yeah, so Ryan and I have many, many late nights thinking about this stuff, but we do want the characters to always feel like they're talking about what's happening on screen, like they're acting like actual characters. Like, we don't want them, you know, to Ken's example, being like punching someone in the face and going like, wow, it's a really nice day. Or like, oh man, it's really bad to fight with your friends. So to like avoid that dissonance, we make sure that the system actually calls things based on exactly what's happening on screen. The system can actually interrupt itself. So if someone is saying something like, my dad made pork chops for dinner, and they get punched in the face, they will stop talking about that. They will get punched in the face and say, you know, Craig, you dick, I was talking about pork chops. Why did you do that to me? So yeah, the system's that smart that actually is able to carry conversations that way, like they were actual boys talking.
Yeah, to make this system work, we have dialogue firing all the time, but we only wanted dialogue to interrupt other dialogue when it made sense, like Jolie's example. So we had to map out, again, we have this like list of possible interactions, when somebody would say something because of what's being done to them, and then we had to, you know, prioritize them, like, what's most important after that, what can be, you know, this hierarchy of interruptibles or suppressing, right? We have lines that actually are being called during a line that's already playing, but that line is like, no, I'm more important, don't play that one.
So Jason, this kind of brings up the idea of authenticity.
Yeah.
So when you know, if you play a Stick of Truth and you watch the show, the games, the town looks absolutely accurate and it feels very South Park. You know, for years you played video games and you see something and you're like, this NBA game looks like real life. But then you look at it now and it's like, no, it doesn't. Right. But when you see this, like South Park, this looks like you're walking.
Like real life.
Yeah, like
no.
Playing it looks like the show. Like, what kind of went into making sure that authenticity was there?
So when we were first meeting with them, we looked at their process and their pipeline for making the show, and they make the show in Maya. And we have an engine internally within Ubisoft called Snowdrop that was used to make the Division. It also consumes Maya assets. So what we basically did was start taking assets from the show, start chewing on them, cleaning them up, and basically auto-importing them in a way into Snowdrop. And then, like this paper sort of version of our town map here, the engine kind of looks like that. If you keep zooming out and zooming out and zooming out, it's like 2D animation cells like that just kind of go to infinity, and your character sort of teleporting all over the place, and you're just teleporting from shot to shot to shot in the show. And so it looks like the show because it is the show, but controlled with really complex, cool cameras and a lot of streaming technology as if we're streaming Manhattan in, but in reality we're just streaming in all of these paper cutouts. Oh, and we have new places too.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of a neat point, though, right? That, like, our camera... Oh, right.
Yeah. The Buca di Fagaccini. So, like, this is only, you know, approximately 4 days after the end of the Stick of Truth. So South Park is still South Park, but at the same time, we do things like the show does, where whatever is convenient for the plot kind of suddenly appears in South Park. So in this case, you can't have a crime-ridden town without an Italian restaurant, Buca di Fagaccini. And then we have, I think we've shown things before, like our Peppermint Hippo, the strip club is there, because you really need that seedy side of things. Not to be judgy, I'm sorry. And then we have new exclusive stuff, too. which will go by in a second when Jules clicks. Oh,
there we go.
Oh, Shitty Walk. That's actually not the right Shitty Walk, is it? I don't know. But we changed it to match Shitty Paw Town, which is now where Shitty Walk is. After season 19, they gentrified the top, or the northwest corner of South Park, as I think of it, which is now Shitty Paw Town, which has Skeeter's Wine Bar and the Shitty Walk. And the ruins of Soda Sopa are down around Kenny's house, so you can kind of explore just the total mess they left behind there.
Yeah. Like, somehow Kenny's house is even more sad than the last time. Not possible.
Which is great for gameplay.
It is.
That's what we've discovered.
Like, you need something broken in just the right way for gameplay? Well, let me show you a house.
Yeah, let me show you a place that we can let you absolutely destroy somebody's poor person's house.
So, Julie, with all the authenticity of the look, how does that kind of affect how you write the characters and, you know, all the narrative dynamics?
Yeah, we really, really try to think of them as though they're behaving in the show. So even when you're walking around the world, you know, a lot of video games will have a character kind of walk on screen with you and, like, talk to you and walk away. Like, we won't do that. We make sure that everything is composed like a shot. We try to put the characters kind of on the lower third of the screen like they would be in the show. We make sure when a character talks to you, they're offset from you in such a way that looks like it was framed intentionally. And it's all systemic, of course, because we're not going to hand off our other thing and kill ourselves. But there, it is actually built in such a way that it's told to behave as close to South Park as possible by a bunch of computer code telling what to do. So it's just really important to us to have that kind of authenticity in the dialogue, but also in how they're behaving on screen, how they're animating, what they're doing, what they're looking at. That's all systems that we put at, like, the utmost priority.
Yeah, that authenticity into a superhero story also required that we had Morgan Freeman in the game, so.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
You need your smart.
You always need
smart
Morgan Freeman. Yeah. Makes sense. So now we're going to go to some questions from the big, beautiful kids out there. First off, will the bloody tampon weapon be making a comeback?
Superheroes' weapons come from within, so I guess if you had a tampon in. No. new powers.
I got their periods once.
What?
They got their periods once.
Yeah. I'm not saying they couldn't have. You can be a girl. It's just I'm not. You don't use it as a weapon necessarily. Enemies.
Necessarily.
There are some enemies that have some menstrual weapons.
Menstrual related weapons confirmed.
Okay.
What team are each of you on? Team Coon or Mysterion?
Ooh. Oh.
No, Mysterion all the way.
What?
Oh, wait, what? Sorry. Were you firstly on?
Oh, are you saying, like, so they're, well, I'll tell you that they're called the Coon and Friends and Freedom Pals? and I am definitely a Coon and Friend. Yeah.
I don't think we can talk anymore.
I just follow Kyle.
Yeah.
He's my favorite.
Wherever the human kite goes, so goes Jimmy.
Does the game have any crossover with any other Ubisoft properties?
There will be some funny stuff in there, I think. But as far as like a full, you know, you can play as Watch Dogs, not, no.
Mr. Watch Dogs?
Oh, Mr. Watch Dogs.
You'll find some Ubisoft self-effacing humor.
We'll put
in there.
Like a bale of hay somewhere.
Yeah, don't worry.
So Jason, this is a good one for you. How much of the art is like a direct digital transfer from the show's animation files? And was it a simple process to move over the season 19 stuff?
How much? I've been getting this ratio question a lot lately. pretty much everything, all of the backgrounds, all of the cutscenes come from South Park. So they're 100% of it is show authentic. And then what's the second part of that question?
Was it a simple move to add the season 19 content?
In terms of, like, we do actually have a pretty efficient process. So when suddenly Shitty Paw Town and the ruins of Soda Sopa existed, it became more of a question for them. It's like, how much do you guys want to reset this? You know, like, does Trey just want to forget season 19 by the time the game comes out, or does he want it to have that sort of legacy that impacts the game? And really that conversation took longer than just, okay, cool, yeah. Build it, import it, we're good.
Yeah, but building that pipeline was a big chunk of work.
Yeah, it's been like 18
there's
months.
Nothing funnier or sadder than, like, watching an engineer rip out all the really pretty stuff from the division, and then having them do a papercraft engine instead inside that
section. But it's really advanced.
Yeah. No, like, it is. It's crazy great tech for 2D cutouts. Like, it's...
Yeah, if any of you guys know anything about like rendering in games or in animation, you use these things called NURBS, which are like vectors. And game programs can't use those because they are too hard to calculate. So we actually take South Park's NURBS and turn them into polygons, and it's awesome. Like, I've never worked on a game that had tech like that. Like, I never thought I'd be working with these curves again. So you can actually zoom in to our game, and it still looks awesome because it is mimicking these kinds of, like, curves. So it still looks like paper, like, even if your camera gets, like, super close. So, again, with our camera authenticity stuff, we can really actually do cut-in shots like the show and just say, like, you know, I want a close-up on Kite right now. Cool. No worries.
How much influence do Mantre have in the non-script aspects of the game?
A ton. Absolutely everything. So, I mean, they are the creative directors of everything. So when we bring gameplay down, recently we were talking about, you know, fart sounds and, like, that's, of course, stuff that they have a stake in, but, like, how you expose a puzzle, how you really kind of reveal gameplay moments, they want to know, like, for them, a lot of, like, visceral controls and, like, the speed of load times and the feel of menus, all of that stuff matters to them because it's their brand.
Are there a lot of callbacks and references to the actions from Stick of Truth?
The actions from Stick of Truth.
I don't want to spoil anything.
I know.
Yeah.
You start the game as King Douchebag.
Yes.
So you can know that.
Spoiler.
Yeah, sorry. You start the game as King Douchebag, and from there, the boys kind of switch games on you. So you go from the height of your power as the most powerful person in the last game they were playing to now somebody that starts a new character sheet. You have to start from a blank page and figure out what kind of superhero and you're going to be in this RPG.
How big is the world compared to Stick of Truth?
The town is bigger. The crawls are a lot longer. Crawls are what we refer to when you kind of, like, go out dungeon. Of the town and into spaces, like the dungeon crawls. Yeah. Those are big.
You know, what's funny, though, is you can't, like, again, it's only 4 days later, so South Park, the town, hasn't suddenly grown like a Metropolis wing. One of the ways in which we tried to expand the game, though, is having it, you know, like things change over time. So, you know, as the game progresses, like, people start, you know, they're not shoveling snow forever. You know, like, they start moving around to different places and different things
sweet
happen.
Shoveling snow technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Ryan, how many fart tracks are in the game?
Okay.
He's, like, looking through the assets.
Hundreds.
In his mind.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a funny story of recording those assets using the noise putty I was talking about earlier. It was me and one of the other designers, and we're in our recording booth with our fart putty in hand, you know, with a mic, just going to town with the putty.
yes.
And you know, here we are just making fart sound after fart sound, trying not to laugh so the recording is clean. So, but inevitably, probably every 30 seconds, one of us would crack up, which then would make the other person laugh. But we're both, like, holding our breath with sweat dripping down our brow and making these farts, and then one of us loses it. And in the recording is just these moments of very strange laughter and gasping for air.
It's awesome. Ken, to end this, can you tell me a little bit about the Nosulous Rift?
Oh, no. a crazy piece of fiction somehow extruded into our reality? Yeah, okay, so, like, the... You know, when you're working on a game like this, you know, at some point, you know, we're working on stuff for the PC and the consoles, and, like, man, wouldn't it be great if you were, like, inside of this, like, in VR? And, of course, that's crazy, because it's, you know, a 2D world. But you start going, man, if only there was some way that, you know, people could smell this stuff. And I swear to God, it was a joke. Like, it was supposed to, you know, just be something that, you know, wouldn't that be funny, ha ha, until Ubisoft's marketing team actually made the Nautilus Rip. It is a real thing that we've actually run a lot of people through. You strap it to your nose, and when you're playing the game, it just releases what we like to call flavor packets. You know, right into your nose area.
What's the name of the fragrance?
I just remember the ingredients, you know, like chipotle and cabbage.
Chorizo?
Chorizo, yeah, that's it, yeah.
It's and onions.
What's really exciting is you can all try this out over at the Ubisoft booth, so
if
definitely do that. You can notice Ubisoft is the big red one there, in case you didn't know. Trying to make it clear, straight line. You can also get the Coon Pin over there, not today, but tomorrow, so maybe you want to make a couple trips over there. Ladies and gentlemen, you all should pre-order South Park, The Fractured Butthole. If you do, you get the Stick of Truth free. That's super exciting. Who's excited about that? Give it up for the awesome Ubisoft San Francisco team. Thank you all very much. You can get your Mysterion on the way out.
Thanks.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate it. No more work.